According to the U.S. Department of Labor, in 2019, about 8,500 employers stole compensation from their workers. Many of those employers are repeat offenders, and low-income workers are most at risk. Our next guest has been digging into the factors behind wage theft and learning why there aren't more consequences for businesses that do it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been a victim one way or another of wage theft? Are you aware of your rights and resources? Do you think there needs to be more enforcement? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Alexia Fernandez-Campbell is a senior reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. She covers labor and workers' rights. Alexia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
As you point out in your big new report for the Center for Public Integrity, wage theft isn't exactly a legal term, though it's most of the forms of it are against the law. Can you tell us what we mean when we use the phrase wage theft?
Yeah, so wage theft includes some common scenarios that maybe a lot of workers are familiar with, like, you know, they say, don't work, we don't pay over. So they'll only pay you for 40 hours, but expect you to work more than 40 hours. You know, there's also bosses who say, you know, we don't pay overtime rates, but we'll pay your same rate. So you work more than 40 hours a week, but you earn the same amount of money instead of 50% extra. And it's also the people that, you know, end up earning less than the minimum wage. And sometimes employers just don't pay workers at all and, you know, hope that they won't complain or try or sue them.
And what kind of enforcement is there, at least in theory, you focus mostly on the federal level to try to make sure this doesn't happen?
Yeah, so the Department of Labor is in charge of enforcing the law, the federal law, which is the Fair Labor Standards Act. The problem is that they are very underfunded and they don't have a lot of investigators and they don't have a lot of lawyers. So sometimes when they catch employers breaking the law, they'll sometimes demand back wages to repay them, but they won't fine them. They won't, even ones that, you know, companies that repeatedly break the law, they won't get fined. They won't take them to court. So, you know, companies just keep doing this over and over again.
So, and as you write, if I'm an employer and I decide and I make employees, as you say, do some of their work off hours or underpay, pay under the minimum wage, that kind of thing, I know as a company, my main risk is at worst, if I'm caught, I might have to pay that back pay. So some companies apparently are willing to take that risk.
Yeah, because think about it. I mean, if you're a worker and you end up like you steal from your employer, you know, that's going to be a crime. You're going to, you know, if you do it a lot, you go to jail. But, you know, if an employer breaks the law and takes wages from their employees, it's a civil infraction. So the worst that's going to happen is, you know, maybe you pay a fine, like $1,000 fine. Maybe, you know, if they're going really hard, then you might pay like, you know, double the amount that you owe in damages to the employee. But most of the time what we've seen is that, you know, all you have to do is pay the money back. So, you know, it just happens so often that the chances that you don't get caught are pretty high. So, and even if you do get caught, all you have to do is pay the money that you owed. And so that, you know, it doesn't really stop employees. It doesn't give employers a reason to not do it.
And can you tell us a little bit about the scope of the problem? I gave one statistic there. How widespread is wage theft?
Yeah, so I was looking at the data that we got through a Freedom of Information Act request. And, you know, I thought that it would be obvious that there are just like some states where it's higher violations, but it's just like across the board. It doesn't matter if you in the blue state, red state, it's just happening everywhere. Even some states that have high, like really strong wage theft laws, there's still like there are tons of cases. So we're talking about like millions of dollars taken every year from workers just from the violations caught by the Department of Labor, not including others. But, you know, some economists, they say that it's, you know, billions of dollars every year that workers are losing out on. And it's usually the, you know, the lowest paid workers who don't understand the law and aren't aware of the rights or are just afraid of losing their jobs if they complain.
Right. You're working a lot with federal data, but as you point out in the piece and you just mentioned, economists think the problem is bigger. The stuff that ends up on federal data is only if a worker realized they've been a victim of wage theft and taken the initiative to file a complaint with the Department of Labor, right? Those are the ones that'll be in those official statistics.
Well, that's true. So for the most part, it's always been complaint driven. So it requires like an employee or a union to file a complaint on behalf of an employee. But the Department of Labor does target some industries and take initiative to go after some employers, and they'll just like do surprise visits. But it's just, they just don't have enough investigators. I mean, they really have so few investigators that it happens that they'll give surprise visits or do surprise investigations. It's very rare.
We're picking up our talk now with Lexia Fernandez-Campbell. She covers labor for the Center for Public Integrity and has been reporting on the issue of wage theft around the country. People being required to do some of their work for free without clocking in, being paid under minimum wage, not getting overtime when by law they should. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has this happened to you or someone you know at the workplace? Was there a successful legal challenge? Do you think there's enough awareness about wage theft? Employers, what do you know about this issue? What do you watch out for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Alexia, in your piece, you write about some of the workers most vulnerable to wage theft, often members of minority groups. What kind of things did you find out?
Yeah, so we found out that, I quoted some research from some economists, and they've looked at this issue. And looking at surveys from the Census Bureau, they've found that Latino workers in particular are the most vulnerable to getting paid less than the minimum wage. They're like twice as likely as white employees to be paid less than the minimum wage, and black workers are 50% more likely to be paid less than the minimum wage. So it's something that is not surprising in a way, because a lot of the low wage workforce is made up of workers of color. So there's that. But it's also just, because they, many of them didn't maybe graduate from high school and they're in like these low wage jobs. And so a lot of that is how that ends up happening.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ray is with us in Milwaukee. Ray, hello.
Hi, I'm a stagehand. Right now I work for a union for the last 20 years, but prior to working in the union, I worked at a local big theater here in town in Milwaukee, and they were paying us stagehands maybe $12 to $13 an hour. But through talking to the traveling bands and whatever other shows were at our theater, we found out that the theater was charging the traveling shows as if we were union stagehands. So they were charging $20, $25 to $30 an hour for our labor. They were literally making money off of our labor and not, passing that on to us, and the ticket prices would be the same as at a union theater. And I don't know if that's really wage theft, but it sure sounds shady to me, and it's very common practice for non-union theaters to do this procedure.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. It does sound kind of shady, Alexia, and maybe it's fraudulent, but if I'm reading your work correctly, it wouldn't necessarily constitute a wage theft.
Yeah, so that's an interesting scenario. I hadn't heard about that before, but what I have seen a lot of is companies that will subcontract with other companies, and they'll say in their contract, this is how much we're going to pay our workers. And I think in some contracts, so it depends, is it legally binding? I would think so, that if you say you're going to pay your workers this much, that it would be legally binding. But maybe, whatever contract he's referring to, it might not have been legally binding, saying this is how much we're going to pay the workers. And so, the company just took some of the, shaved off part of the wages and kept the money for themselves.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Ted now in northern Wisconsin. Ted, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Ted?
A waiter at a restaurant, and you get credit card tips, and your employer never puts them on your pay stub. The credit card tips just poof, disappear. What can you do about that?
Ted, thanks a lot for the call. And Alexia, I know tipped employees, thinking waiters, wait staff here, are a big part of the wage theft story. What do you say to Ted?
Yeah, Ted, this is such a huge problem, especially in the restaurant industry, because, employers can pay less than the minimum wages law and, make up the rest in tips, let workers make the rest in tips. But yeah, so they're, I don't know how, like by law, how it's supposed to appear in your paycheck, but you're definitely supposed to be getting your tips. The problem is that, you know, under federal law, your boss just has to make sure that you're earning minimum wage under federal law. Now, I don't know, you know, the extra tip that you'd get if it was beyond minimum wage. Some restaurants think that they can keep the extra tips, but, you know, the best thing to do is to, you know, file a complaint with the Department of Labor, or if the state's work for your, you know, Wisconsin's own Department of Labor, that would be my advice.
Thanks a lot for that call. And it gets worse, as I understand it, Alexia, from your reporting. As you said, if that tipped worker, their tips don't bring them up to minimum wage, their employer is supposed to make up the difference. And that, you write, often does not happen, right?
Yeah, because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, restaurant servers, they're rushing around, they're getting cash, but, you know, their boss is supposed to keep track of how much tips they're earning, because they need to make sure that they're earning enough to at least get the minimum wage. And, you know, that just, so many employers will just say, oh, you know, we weren't keeping track, we don't know. But no, they're required to keep track of how much you're making in tips, even if it's cash tips, so that they know that if you're making the minimum wage. What happens is, you know, they're not keeping track, and they just hope that the server will not be keeping track either and will not notice that they're getting less than the minimum wage.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Carrie with us next in Green Bay. Carrie, hello.
Hi. My husband was the sole employee for a detailer in this area, and she never provided him with a pay stub. And when he kept asking to see the pay stub, she said she kept files in her file cabinet, and she would ask him, why do you want to see that? So he never saw anything until the end of the year. And he would ask her, like, why is my pay so low? And she would tell him, oh, it's just taxes. Well, at the end of the year, what he received from her was a Word document that she had typed up and handwritten in numbers that she said her accounting gave him. And we found out he was only paid for 4 full-time weeks out of the entire year. So she was down marking his labor, and there was nothing he could file about it at that point. So he was stolen. He had wage stolen, and he was bullied about asking about it.
Carrie, thanks a lot for that call. Is there recourse for somebody in that small company in that situation, Alexia, where it sounds like a duplicitous sort of situation?
Yeah, so under federal law, it depends on how big the company has to make at least $500,000 in revenue to be subject to the Fair Labor Standards Act. But if they are subject to it, if they make that much money, it doesn't matter if they have like only one employee. If they're making that much money, like, companies are supposed to keep records of their pay. Like, that is just, that's just the law. So if this happened within the past 2 years, you still have time to file a complaint with the Department of Labor. If it happened more than 2 years ago, then, you know, the way the law is that you can't try to like get your money back if it's been more than 2 years since it passed. But yeah, that sounds like an absolutely like terrible situation. And unfortunately, that's more common than people realize.
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. Sorry that happened to your husband. We're talking to Alexia Fernandez-Campbell with the Center for Public Integrity about her recent investigation on wage theft in the United States. Alexia, before I go back to our callers, if somebody, say, in that situation or other wage theft situations wanted to take their employer to court, I mean, given the amounts of money that are involved, it might be, you know, a few thousand dollars. Is it hard to get even attorneys to take up a case like that?
Yeah, it actually is. One of the things that I've heard from a lot of experts I talk to is that the dollar amounts are so low that a lot of attorneys won't take on these cases unless they're like at least $2,000. But what attorneys find in many cases, and first of all, like the attorneys that handle these cases are called wage and hour attorneys. What they'll do is they'll check to see if the worker was also working more than 40 hours a week, because many times they'll come and say, hey, they didn't pay me for this week of work. And then, so the attorney will ask, well, have you also been working more than 40 hours a week and not being paid overtime? And they'll be like, oh yes, that happens all the time. So then that increases the amount of money owed. And maybe the worker didn't realize that they were also getting, you know, scammed in that way through overtime, not just the pay. So attorneys will try to check to see if there are overtime violations as well. And then they'll be more likely to take on the case. But attorneys will take, from what I've heard, like, will take on cases even without charging attorney's fees, because the way the law is, if an employer is found at fault, then the employer will end up paying the attorney's fees. So they'll take on a lot of cases But yeah, if it's less than $2,000, it's a lot of attorneys won't touch it.
And I should say, I said these were small amounts of money. That's by lawsuit standards. For somebody making a low income, you found, you know, this $1,000 or $2,000 of wage theft could make a big difference.
Yeah, you know, and what we found, like, some researchers have shown that, you know, the lowest paid workers in the U.S., like the bottom 15% of income earners make less than the minimum wage. And what they're losing is about like $1.50 per hour, which doesn't sound like a lot for some people, but it is a lot when you're making minimum wage. That's like a huge chunk of your paycheck. So, so this is a big problem, and it makes it harder for people to pay their rent and pay their bills.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jill is with us in Northeast Wisconsin. Jill, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Jill?
Sure. So I just took on a new role in human resources, and I was informed I would be the backup payroll person. And it has been about a month, and it sounds like I'm the point payroll person, actually. And I have noted copious discrepancies within the system, which just seems to be in shambles. I have had so many employees come up to me bringing up discrepancies that have taken place over the course of the year prior to me being there. And as I learned to go back into the archives and review each weekly pay rate, and they were in fact not paid for those hours or those bonuses. And they are also on the lower end of the income spectrum. The other thing I would say is when we talk about the lower end, a lot of my employees, I've found, they really don't understand how to read their paycheck. And a lot of times it is online now, and they may not have access to that. So that also poses us to a challenge if they would like to bring up an inquiry.
Jill, thanks a lot for that call. Wow, a lot there, Alexia. What do you think of the story Jill has from her new workplace?
Wow, I mean, I can't imagine being in a situation like that where you're handling payroll and then you notice that the workers at the bottom are really getting, like, I guess ripped off or cheated. That's a really terrible situation. But unfortunately, like I said, it's more widespread than people think. And many times, like she said, people don't realize that they're getting screwed over. You assume that your boss is going to at least be paying you what he said. But it's not happening like all the time.
Thanks for that call, Jill. I don't remember seeing this in your reporting. Is there such a thing as a whistleblower scenario for someone in a position like that sees this kind of wage theft, not just one or two times, but consistently?
Yeah. So first of all, I don't think they call them whistleblowers, but a third party can file a complaint with the Department of Labor and say this is happening. What I don't know is I don't think you can do it anonymously. I'm not sure about that. I would go to the Department of Labor's website because you don't have to be an employee to file the complaint. You could be like a third party or witness to it to file it. I just don't know if you're guaranteed to be anonymous. Like they may end up, if they contact the company, they may have to say where they got the information from.
Thanks again for that call. I appreciate it. Time for one more caller. I think Rena is with us in Franklin. Rena, hello.
Hi. I was a closer for a title company / mortgage company, and I had to go wherever the lender was, and sometimes I would be there until 6 o'clock or later, and we're talking about Cedarburg to Kenosha, way out to Pewaukee and wherever else, but I would come back in to the office or do it the next morning, log on to, ADT or one of those, you know, online pay things. And then the boss's secretary, assistant, whatever, would change it so that I wouldn't get the real hours. And it was easy to prove where I had been and for how long. She just didn't think that I should get over 40 hours. So the company went out of business and I didn't cry. But I mean, she just, you know, countermanded it. I complained to her. I complained to the president of the company, and nothing ever changed. And then, you know, the company closed its doors, and we were all out of a job. But it was common, just so common for her to steal from us
when Rena, really I have to jump in because we're just about out of time. But Alexia, I mean, is that, you know, the company moving back the odometer basically on your time clock? Is that a complainable thing that somebody could take to the Labor Department?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That is so common. It's so sad, but that is so common. Like, it's even happened to me when I was an hourly worker at a newspaper. Not where they would change the hours, but where they would say, you know, we're only paying for 40 hours a week, and but they would still expect you to work more than 40 hours a week. So, I mean, it's just such a common scenario.
Rena, sorry that happened to you. Thanks for calling in. And Alexia, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexia Fernandez-Campbell is a senior reporter at the Center for Public Integrity. She joined us today to talk about her recent investigation on wage theft.